This week in Loikomania, we talk about Iron Man, Atlas, X-Men Legacy, you know, the newest chapter of Second Coming, which I never stop talking about. Oh, and of course, a little book called Avengers Number One. After this. Loikomania Episode 6, this is Pat Loika, and as usual, I'm going to be talking about stuff that I've been digging in the last week. Last week was a fairly big week as far as the releases go, because a couple of Heroic Age titles debuted, particularly Avengers number 1 and Atlas number 1. Of course, another Heroic Age book that came out without the Heroic Age banner on it was Invisible Iron Man number 26. So we'll talk about that first. Iron Man, good read. Unfortunately, I'm getting to that point where I'm actually noticing some of the photo referencing that has been mentioned by many other people before, which I've tried to ignore. But you know, it's gotten to a point here, particularly with the Hammer Girls, and that's really my only complaint. And I kind of wish that Salvador LaRocca, the artist of the book, has an inker, because I don't know, inks add a lot to the look of the book, and the really thin line work here is, I don't know, it's not my thing. But the story itself is fantastic. Of course, it's more of Tony kind of getting readjusted after after waking up from a coma, you know, as in the events of Stark Disassembled. He's trying to sort things out in his life, trying to build up his new company, Stark Resilient. And there's a lot of really, really cool moments here. There, and despite the fact that he doesn't even appear in this book, Steve Rogers' presence in the Marvel Universe is felt because of his assistance in getting a few things back to Tony Stark. Of course, we still have our great supporting cast like Rhodey and Maria Hill, and we are introduced to a new character, a person that at one time worked for Tony Stark, but he had fired, who actually came out to do better things with his life. And this is a, you know, very light on action or anything. We do get a glimpse of the possible villain of the story arc, which is the Spymaster, who looks really cool. They've utilized the designs for him that were made by Fraser Irving in the Iron Man The Inevitable miniseries that came out like right around the time when Extremis was still going. So check out Iron Man number 26. I will not spoil anything for you here, not yet anyway. But it's a fun read. It's great. It's a great character study, really. This current story arc has been good with character moments, and there's a lot of it here. That Tony is being redefined for, you know, this generation of readers, and we're getting to know other characters like Maria Hill and of course Rhodey. So pick that up. Next up, I'm taking a detour from the Heroic Age stuff really quickly, and I'm going to talk about X-Men Legacy number 236, which is Chapter 8 of Second Coming. Again, now that Hope is on in the Mutant Sanctuary we know as Utopia, things are starting to get really bad for everyone in San Francisco, because Bastion and his forces have unleashed some kind of dome trapping the city, and trapping basically the mutants in one spot. And unfortunately, you know, as revealed last week, the members of the X Squad, you know, the X-Men science team, have been led off the island, thus making it a lot tougher for the X-Men inside Utopia to figure out what's going on. And It was a pretty good issue. It felt a little slow, but it did pick up later on, because it had the markings of like a I hate to use the word filler, but that's kind of what it felt like when it first started. But halfway through the book, it picked up and felt like an important chapter of the book, because we see why they were entrapped in the island. Another cool touch, though, is rather really nice touch is the fact that the Avengers show up in the book, and I'm not going to tell you what they did. Well, pretty easy to figure out. As far as the story goes, though, as far as the creative process behind this book, I'm not really getting into Greg Land's stuff lately. I mean, there was a point where I thought his stuff was improving, and I was kind of digging some of his stuff. But then there's another issue where it kind of went back to, I don't know, I just wasn't feeling it. Some of the faces looked odd, of course, and some of the anatomy, some panels were a little off. I didn't feel like that head belonged to that body, that sort of thing. And of course, the script was always good. Mike Carey always has a great grasp on all these characters. Of course, I still recommend picking this up. The overall story has been great. My tastes are different from yours, so what you feel about the art may be different from what I feel, but the art has been kind of detrimental for me. But we're dealing with commercial art here. Comics are commercial art, and people like it. People like it. So it's not my place to be. I'm not going to say it sucks, because I don't think it does. It's just not for me. Next is Atlas Number One, a book that I've been waiting for quite some time. It's by Jeff Parker and Gabriel Hardman, and it's colored by Elizabeth Breitweiser, and it has it also features the work of Rummel and Rosanis. And I like the fact that the recap page for this book pretty much just tells you the concept of these characters. They are a team of 1950s adventurers reformed to battle Earth's greatest threats while under the guise of an evil organization based underneath San Francisco. They are the agents of Atlas. That is all you need to know when you pick up this book, and they are right. This book does a good job of, if there's one thing I can say about this book, they really make you give a crap about Triathlon, or now known as 3D Man. And of course, the art by Gabriel Hardman is just gorgeous. And of course, Jeff Parker's script continues to be sharp. I love this book. Sometimes I am a little bit at a loss for words about how to describe it, but it is a fantastic read. We deal with what happened to, this book is basically what happened to Triathlon or 3D Man or Delroy Garrett, whatever you want to call him now, and what happened to him since the Skrull invasion. Because if you recall, he was part of the Avengers initiative, and he became a part of the Skrull kill crew. But then at the end of all that, he kills a Skrull that was actually on Earth's side, and a lot of people did not like that he had done that. So this is the story of what happened to him. He moves to L.A. He tries to start a life out there. And, of course, he runs into the agents of Atlas. I'm not going to, of course, spoil anything yet, because it hasn't even been a week. But suffice it to say, it's a fun book. Pick it up. Prior knowledge of the Marvel Universe is not necessary, nor is prior knowledge of Atlas necessary. You just need to know it's a book, it came out, it's the first issue, it's a perfect jumping on point. So please give it a try. Once again, it's written by Jeff Parker, illustrated by Gabriel Hardman, it's Atlas. Buy it. And finally, the last of my comic reviews for this week, and I know it's been Marvel heavy, but it so happened that a lot of Marvel titles that I like came out this week. And I'm not going to apologize for that, but this is just how it is. This week's final book, of course, is Avengers Number One. Probably the flagship of the Heroic Age, or of Marvel in general. This is, of course, written by Brian Michael Bendis, illustrated by John Romita Jr. and Klaus Janson, and colored by Dean White. And it is a... Brian Michael Bendis has been writing the Avengers for better part of 5-6 years now. And this is a very, very different take of the Avengers from what I'm used from him. I mean, this feels like something, you'd think this was something you would read out of, I don't know, from Kurt Busiek or Roger Stern. No, this is Brian Michael Bendis writing this book. And it's really a lot of fun, you know? Lots of stuff happens here, big action. I mean, if you've been reading Brian's stuff for the last how many years, and you know he likes to take his time to establish his team, and in this issue, within the first eight pages or so, he establishes who the team will be already. You know, there's no building the band type of storyline here. We just get right to it. Steve Rogers assembles his team of Avengers, and of course, I don't think it's considered a spoiler at this point, but he builds a team composed of Thor, Spider-Man, Hawkeye, Wolverine, Captain America, Spider-Woman, and Iron Man. And Steve, of course, wants them to be, you know, he bases them in Avengers Tower in New York City, and they, of course, they all have their issues and they're all still trying to deal with the fact that, you know, the world's kind of a better, nicer place to be in now. And of course, Hawkeye's happy. Tony Stark and Steve Rogers, though, they still have some issues that they need to work out, which will probably be worked on in Avengers Prime when it ships in a few weeks. And I like the fact that they haven't forgotten, you know, all the stuff that came before, and this, which is great. And there are some really cool, really funny moments here also, like Thor and Bucky's, Captain, the modern Captain America's little conversation, which was kind of hilarious. I'm not gonna spoil that for you. Nice touches like Spider-Woman and Wolverine having a conversation amongst themselves was great because, well, if you know your Wolverine and Spider-Woman, you know these two are fairly close. So I like that they kind of, you know, separated themselves from everyone else. We also get to see who the Avengers' liaison with Steve Rogers is, and it's kind of a surprise, but not. Considering if you've read New Avengers for the last few years, you know that this particular character who is their liaison is not someone you would think would be working with the Avengers quite closely, but she has, you know, she has grown quite a bit since those days. And once again, I will not ruin anything for you. We are, of course, we get to see a classic Avengers villain show up, among other things. A lot of big concept stuff that, you know, like, once again, I never thought I would see Brian Bendis tackling, and yet here he is. And it looks like he's off to a good start. Again, In this issue, there is also a bonus feature, which is kind of, I guess you can call it a backup story, but I wouldn't really call it that. It's, you know, it's a completely separate feature in its own. It's the oral history of the Avengers. It's, of course, written by Brian Michael Bendis, and it's based off, it's an origin of Avengers, but taken from the point of view of the Avengers. You know, they talk about how their team came together in their own words. And it features some, you know, some familiar images, like there's an Art Adams piece here that was a cover to Avengers Classic number 1, and they also have a cover to Avengers number 1 by Jack Kirby, but recolored and by Dean White. And it's really funny. It's very familiar to it's in the same format as the Saturday Night Live book, Live from New York. And it's basically, you know, team members talking about, you know, the team. It's a fun little thing. It's actually a fairly good. It's a fairly heavy read. I mean, there's a lot to read in there. It's about 8 pages long, but there's quite a bit to read. So it's a nice little deal. You know, for $3.99, you get your 22-page story, and you get this as a backup, which is not bad. Considering we've been buying $3.99 Avengers books for about a year, for a few years now, for a couple, actually, no, not even a year, without any backup stories, and here we are, we're getting this now. So it's a nice bargain, definitely a good bang for your buck. Once again, another book that I highly recommend. So pick up the Avengers number 1. Once again, it's by Brian Bendis and John Romita Jr. And it's fun times to be an Avengers fan. I'm really looking forward to what he does with what they do with New Avengers, and of course what Ed Brubaker is doing with Secret Avengers, because this looks like a really, really fun time to be an Avengers or a Marvel fan. And that should be it for comics right now. I'll be back shortly, and I'll be talking a little bit about Lost and kind of say something about 24, because I saw an episode recently, and I've been behind, but I saw it, and I was a little shocked to see what I saw. So, I'll be back in a bit. I used to be really addicted to the TV show 24. You know, the basic premise of that show is that this is like a 24-hour period. Every season is like 24 hours in the life of the main character, you know, namely Jack Bauer, who is played by Kiefer Sutherland. I watched the first few episodes of this season, and I kind of got busy. I had to finish work on a graphic novel, and I ended up missing a good chunk of the season. And I just happened to turn onto Fox last Monday and saw some of 24, and I realized that something crazy just happened. They brought back President Logan. Now, President Logan was a brilliant villain in Season 5, a great character. And last time I saw him, I thought his ex-wife had killed him or something. I'm not entirely sure. But here he is, you know, he's doing political maneuvers behind the scenes. And I have to say that I like the fact that they brought the character back, but I thought that, I don't know, it was a little too late for, you know, I mean, it's just preposterous that they would bring this president who did all kinds of crazy, crazy backdoor stuff back when he was running the show, and I'm just shocked that they brought him back. It's, I don't know, it reeks of desperation for the show. But the thing is, you know, the show is ending. This is its final season, so I guess they have to bring back everyone's favorite villain one more time. I also found out that character that was introduced last season, Agent Walker, Renee, got killed off in this season, which makes me sad because she is also a great character. You know, it's kind of funny how this character had evolved into the idealistic, I believe in the system type of person, you know, I guess she's like a female wannabe Jack Bauer now after this season. So it was ridiculous that she, no, not really ridiculous, but it was just sad that they killed her off, because I think that character had a lot of potential. But then again, this is the final season of the show, and it doesn't really matter anymore. Anyway, yeah, President Logan's back, and I guess so am I. I'm going to be following the show until the bitter end. I think the finale is airing this Monday, too. It's a 2-hour finale, so I'm going to see how it ends, and I hope to God it's good. Anyways, I want to talk about Lost, which I never talk about enough here on this show, as you are quite aware. There was quite a bit of stuff happening here. Lots of betrayals, lots of death again. And this is, of course, something that we should be used to by now, because this is Lost after all. I was sad to see Ben kind of turn and do what he did to Whitmore here in this episode. And then again, he has every reason to do that, but, you know, he turned on him, which pretty much has him turning on the other people he was with. I mean, I'm hoping to God that, you know, that's not the last we see of Alpert either, Richard Alpert, because he's a great character. But then again, as of this Sunday, it'll be the last we see of any of these characters anyway. Of course, Jack finally cements his position as the chosen protector of the island, replacing Jacob. And, oh my god, I apologize if I've been spoiling it, but there's a lot of stuff here, and I usually avoid doing spoilers, but I've gotten to that point where it's really hard to talk about without spoiling anything, because there's everything that happens in this show right now is a spoiler. So, my apologies for that. And what else is left when the next season starts? I mean, actually, I did want to comment on the Flash sideways stuff. I'm trying to figure out why Desmond is trying to bring every single person to that concert that he was meant to bring Charlie to in the beginning of the towards the beginning of the season. Another interesting note from a Flash sideways is the fact that Ben kind of got a glimpse of his life in the island, which is pretty cool. There's so many questions that need to be answered. I'm glad they have like 2.5 hours to answer them. But I have a feeling that this Lost finale may not live up to. They may not give you the 2.5 hours that you need. So I don't know. It's been a fun ride this season so far. There's been a lot of great single episodes. Like the Richard Alpert episode has been fantastic, and I thought the Across the Sea between Jacob and the Man in Black was fantastic as well, even though a lot of people seem to be on the fence about it. I have to admit, I'm going to miss the show quite a bit. I liked having to wait. I liked the excitement every Tuesday before the show comes on, And I'm just wondering who's going to be left, who survives, who's going to get screwed over. And I honestly think that Hurley's going to be the only one surviving, because I can't see Jack succeeding as Jacob's replacement, because nothing ever ends well with Jack. However, out of all of them, I think Hugo, or Hurley, is the he's the most innocent, probably the nicest, the most innate good person in that group. I can't help but think that he's going to be the one in the end with the island. But that's just my opinion anyway. That's just my prediction. I'm probably going to be wrong, and it's going to be someone else. Like Jack. Who, really, Jack. Anyways, I've rambled on enough about Lost. We will probably have a couple people on to talk about Lost after it ends, and we're going to spend an entire episode talking about the show. Yeah, I know it's typical fare for me to do that, but hey, whatever. At any rate, you can send me email me at theloika@gmail.com. You can talk about the comic stuff I talked about, talk about the TV stuff, talk about movies that you're digging. I don't care. Send me an email, and we'll read it on the air, and we'll kind of make fun of you for it. You could also friend me on Facebook, facebook.com/patloika, or on Twitter, twitter.com/patloika. I am all over the internet, as you are aware, and you can go to my main website, which is patloika.com, which happens to be my Tumblr blog, where I post random photos, muse about random subjects, waste your time quite well, actually. And that'll be it for me this week. I'll be back next week. We talk about a few collected edition shipping next week. The remastered Fortune and Glory comes out next week, which is something I've been looking forward to for quite some time. Also, IDW's complete Transformers collection is coming out starting next week, and it collects all of their Transformers material in chronological order. And it's going to be in a nice hardcover format, which I'm really dying to pick up. And few other things too, neither one of those books is a straight up Marvel book, so you see I can read other books as well. I mean, seriously, look at next week's release list is insane. There is the Wednesday Comics hardcover, there's Torpedo Volume 2 by Jordi Vernet. I'm like, my god, there's way too much good stuff coming out next week, and I'll probably talk about all of them, and I'll also tell you how broke I am now because of buying all these books. So anyway, y'all have a good week, and I'll see you later.